This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello and welcome to our latest instalment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, CEO and founder of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on real-time treasury, liquidity and risk. Now, our topic today is entitled Financial Fortification, Enhancing Collateral and Liquidity Resilience. Before we get into that, welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon and evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience as we run through this podcast can ask a question and you can ask it by putting it in the comments section on the right-hand side of your screen. I'll take as many of them and ask them as we go, but if there are any left at the end, then I can ask them at the end. We have 30 minutes today. And if you do ask a question, please let us know who you are and, if possible, your role, so we have some context. Now, for the first time, I'm delighted to be joined today by two guest speakers. We've got Philip Forcan and Mark Crowhurst. So, Philip, Mark, would you like to introduce yourselves, tell us who you are and what you do?
Sure. Thanks, Nev. So my name's Philip Forcan. I'm head of collateral at Tonic. Tonic is an expertise led consultancy where we leverage genuine domain and transformation expertise, looking across not just collateral and clearing, but other domains like risk, post-trade, treasury, legal, and most recently digital. And my background is predominantly clearing and collateral across banks, consultancies, in operations and sales roles.
Got it. Mark?
Good afternoon all. I'm Mark Crowhurst. I look after Strategic Risk Partners. I've worked in the world of treasury for 32 years, looking primarily at kind of operating models, technology, governance, risk, and primarily kind of financial resilience, which is our topic today.
Got it. Perfect. Now, we have a history on this show, Philip, of asking people what football team they support and why. Now, Mark's been on before, so I do know he's a big Arsenal fan. So I'm going to ask you, with a bit of fear in my voice here, who you support and why.
Well, I'm also an Arsenal fan. That's because I live in North London, Muswell Hill, and it seems to be the most appropriate team to choose as opposed to the other team, the other side of the Seven Sisters Road. So, yeah, I'm an Arsenal fan and waiting dearly to see if we can win another title.
That was my next question. You're going to win the league. So I've got two gooners on today. Excellent. Now then, onto the subject of today. Probably one of the best titles we've had in a podcast: Financial Fortification, Enhancing Collateral and Liquidity Resilience. So what's probably a good way to kick off is just to explain what we mean by the title and financial fortification. So Mark, do you want to go first?
I think looking at the words, to me, I see it really as about the resilience of a financial service organisation, be it a bank, an insurer, an asset wealth manager, whatever kind of organisation. And really that's about being able to withstand shortfalls and stresses. That's the kind of fortification you're after. I think at the moment there's really a focus on buffers, writing resolution, wind down plans, recovery plans. But these are kind of quite passive ways of approaching fortification. If I think about what financial fortification should be, which is that lovely phrase, the best defense is offense. So it's really about being proactive. And I think that comes down to having the right capabilities. And I'm sure we'll talk more about this as part of the podcast. But that really is about thinking through supporting governance, processes, controls, as well as reliable and timely data to plan for any threats before they arrive at your gates. That's how I see the financial fortification.
Got it. And it's holistic across the entire firm, right?
Absolutely. It's about having all the right defences in place and being offensive, as it were, with them in the nicest possible way, obviously.
Got it. Understand. And Phil, what about you? What's your view on the title and financial fortification?
Yeah, I echo what Mark just mentioned. I mean, it's basically the ability of firms to prepare, adapt and respond effectively in a crisis. So it's not just BAU, but it's really how do you prepare for a crisis? And I look at it through a number of lenses. You've got financial resilience, which looks at the collateral buffers, forecasting what your collateral should be and making sure that you can optimize that collateral most effectively to make sure that the assets that you've got, they're deployed in the best place possible. but also from an operational perspective as well. You know, can I meet the increased demands of a stressed environment? So in my world, extra margin calls, extra sizes of margin calls, all this requires extra support as well. So to be resilient, it's not just having the buffers, but also having the operational capability as well.
Yeah, and Philip, I think when we started off with Planix, we were asked almost all the time about BAU. You know, how do we support that? But over the last few years, there's been a much higher emphasis on stress. What happens if there's black swan events, there's crises? So that's a lot more in the armory that you need to defend against now and have all the plans in place, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as we've seen, the last 5 years, there's been a number of sort of stressed market events, and market participants have all addressed that in a different way. But you know, as we'll speak about later, the regulators really are focusing on making sure firms are have the necessary preparedness for margin calls and liquidity. So absolutely, it's how we'll deal with these stressed events and how do we prepare for the next stressed event, because it won't be the same as what's just gone. So how do you really build that resilient infrastructure that can adapt to whatever the stressed market scenario would be?
Got it, understand. Great.
Those capabilities. Sorry, just to add to that, I think it's also about kind of building those capabilities in as well. So it's not just about, you know, it's not just about having it ready for stress, but actually how do you build that into your day-to-day? Yeah. So that when those stresses occur, you know, you can see them as part of your regular metrics, gathering your regular monitoring and management.
Yeah, so it's almost like saying stress and crises need to be part of BAU because you never know when they're going to happen, so you've got to be ready.
Absolutely.
Got it. Understand. Great. So, Phil, why the need ultimately to integrate between liquidity and collateral? Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, collateral is a key component of a firm's risk sort of liquidity risk management framework. So the businesses are inextricably linked. And as we've seen through the sort of the crisis scenarios, collateral demands can quickly increase, and therefore that's going to impact directly the firm's ability to manage their liquidity. Also, in terms of how changes are happening in the collateral world, moving away from just cash, firms are posting and receiving a lot wider range of assets. Therefore, that's going to have an impact about how firms are looking to manage that inventory. And ultimately, firms are looking to move to real-time settlements to make sure that inventory that they've got, and it could be quite diverse, they've got the ability to understand real-time where that is. And then that allows them to look at their inventory in real-time and make the most appropriate liquidity calls and place their liquidity where it needs to be. So both businesses are really inextricably linked. And we've seen from the crises, when these margin calls increase quite substantially, 30, 40%, that then manifests in where can I access that liquidity from? So you do really need to have a seamless interaction between both of those business lines.
Yeah, and of course, the time frame's shortening, isn't it? We're now T plus one in the US. It's going to come to the rest of the world. We hear T plus zero, right, or T zero. So that time frame in which you have to make those choices is shortening as well. So it's not just you integrate them, but it has to be as real time as you can possibly get as well.
Absolutely. And as we'll speak about later, you know, things like tokenization will address that real time nature as well. But yeah, understanding an accurate view of your inventory is, you know, the foundational point of core credit risk management. And therefore, how you apply that from a liquidity perspective is also key.
Got it. Mark, your views on this?
I mean, kind of just picking up, you know, on what Phil mentioned there. I mean, to me, obviously, collateral is an element of liquidity. And obviously, you know, a lot of organisations focus, particularly on the treasury side, getting the right tools around cash and how they manage cash. But I don't think there's enough time spent in terms of how they integrate the collateral component of that to get what I would call a kind of true picture of liquidity. And it's also worthwhile noting, obviously, the Bank of England, as part of their resolution assessment framework on the big banks, the findings there noted the inability to forecast unencumbered collateral as a key element of that. And that, to me, again, demonstrates around the lack of understanding of a true liquidity position. So how do you kind of bring all those elements together? And of course, we're not talking here about, you know, the big banks. Again, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's about whether it be banks, insurers, and all firms. Obviously, you know, they need to consider liquidity, both on the cash side and on the collateral side. And that really is about overcoming any shortcomings and enhancing the collateral capabilities and aligning them and integrating them with cash to provide that overall view. And again, obviously, we mentioned the stress side of it, but actually it's about, okay, how do you get those capabilities, not just for stress, but also they'll provide opportunities for optimization in BAU as well, if you get them right. So hopefully they can start to kind of pay for themselves rather than just be there as a backstop in time of crisis.
No, look, I would agree. And, you know, we probably saw 10 years ago, it was all about cash. Let me work out where all my cash is. How do I monitor it, report it, so I get the best possible view for the regulator? And I'm in good shape with, obviously, stress. Collateral, we started hearing about 5 years ago. How can I have a proper view on it in real time so I can offset any of it in terms of that calculation and prove that it's there? And I'm only counting it once. I'm not counting it two or three times. So very important part that we're hearing a lot more of right now.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things to look at, Mark mentioned stress testing. It's also forecasting as well. So how can you try and predict and plan? And the more you can predict and plan your margin call requirements, that helps your liquidity desk as well. So having those capabilities and services that can predict what your margin calls could be like earlier on in the day and what the size could be naturally helps your liquidity desk to fund those positions.
Got it. Okay, now we've got a question come in from Dan Feeney. Asked questions previously. So Dan, thanks for your questions over the podcast. Doesn't the real problem exist at the core with batch-based ledgers and monolithic architectures? By the way, my answer to that is I couldn't agree more, Dan. But I'll get Philip and Mark to you. Philip, do you want to go first on that question? For that point of view.
Yeah. So obviously batch processing hampers real-time liquidity and real-time analysis. So absolutely, that there needs to be a move away from that to, first of all, intraday, if you can move it intraday, and then real time would be the ultimate. But yeah, moving away from the batch process, end of day processes that currently prevail in many organizations, you know, that's where organizations really need to focus to get that intraday view and hopefully over time, real time view.
Sure, Mark?
You know, I think it's the challenge that certainly a lot of the larger banks have in terms of, you know, the sheer number of systems that they have, and of course, you know, the restrictions that batch-based processes and obviously in particular ledgers place upon that. Obviously, there's a lot of investment in terms of new ERPs and new ledgers, but really it's about how you think through the integration of those so that you're not just thinking about, you know, how your collateral, your liquidity, plus all the other desks and transactions that you manage as a business fit together, but actually how can you then pull all that information together, integrate it with the right attributes, to give you a sense of what your real-time position might look like, or at least your near real-time position. And that's really very difficult, given that a lot of banks these days still use those very old, to use kind of Dan's phrase, monolithic kind of architectures.
Yeah, look, true. And I think this is happening in every industry. So, you know, in the times of client server, it was always online transaction processing, batch processing. The cloud has enabled more real time, but it's not as easy just move to real time. You can't just take your batch and run it, you know, three or four times a day. It's not that straightforward. So it's not that easy. But Dan, I think you're right. The problem does exist, or one of the issues, the main issues, is these things run with a batch orientation. And this to answer this properly, you need to be more real time. Good. Right. Let's get on to one of our favorite areas, regulators and regulations. So what role does regulation play in the need for firms to evolve in such a way and have that holistic approach across the firm? Phil, do you want to go first?
Sure. So there's a lot of regulation at the moment that the FSB are looking at in terms of enhancing collateral resilience. And they issued a paper in April, and that was predominantly towards buy-side organisations, recognising some of the challenges that they faced in the LDI crisis, or in the dash to cash in 2020. So there are a variety of challenges that firms have faced, and the FSB recognised that and they produced a paper. And from the LDI crisis, we also saw the Bank of England, the pensions regulator, and the FCA also issue recommendations specifically to LDI funds to hold a minimum level of collateral and a minimum standard of collateral resilience. But that type of theme is going to permeate, we feel, throughout more organisations. That's just one subset of the market. And it'll be really interesting to see what the FSB state in their report in December about minimum levels of resilience and what firms should be looking to do. Obviously, the buy side non-bank financial institutions are very, very broad, so no one size fits all. But we expect there to be definite recommendations that firms will need to consider in their target operating models.
Got it. And Mark, your view on this?
I mean, just picking up, I guess, on the LDI piece, I think it's quite interesting the fact that, you know, the Bank of England obviously set out the NBI kind of repo facility, obviously that as a result of that kind of dysfunction as we were in the gilt markets back in September 2022. But I think, again, if you're going to access that facility, you know, for those MBFIs, I mean, you really need to have the appropriate capabilities to access and use that facility as well. So it's not just about, you know, the Bank of England, central banks actually providing support around managing collateral crisis, but also about how you have the capability to use that, forecast it so that you know as and when you need to use it as well. Now, we also know, obviously, that the resolution assessment frameworks that the eight banks in the UK made to look at were really very much focused on building out capability. So do you have the capability to support you in resolution? Obviously, a lot of that is then talking about embedding that in BAU so that you then have something that kind of is more preventative. So how do you actually take a resolution assessment framework and actually make it part of your day-to-day kind of process? You can kind of see that as well through things like, obviously, the solvent wind down on the insurance side, as well as, obviously, that the regulation coming in next year around trading books. So trading book wind down, you know, what that's also looking at is the ability and capability to have the appropriate balance sheet data on trading books. And that's not just having position data, but that's actually having data at kind of an individual contract, collateral and trade level so that you can understand your liquidity resources and obviously therefore understand the associated contractual liquidity flows so that you're better able to obviously manage liquidity, forecast liquidity, and obviously therefore be able to model it better. So to me, your question around regulation and what can the regulator do, to me it's around actually regulation focused on capabilities rather than regulation focused on buffers and having the right amount in reserve. Because of the events of last year with, you know, the banks that were impacted there, you know, buffers won't save you, but capabilities might give you a better fighting chance.
Got it. I mean, ultimately, we're talking about a real-time balance sheet. So you've got, you know, your one view all the time and being able to stress and view that under crisis as well.
I mean, that would be an ideal, again, to the point around you've got a batch-based ledger. That's going to be difficult for some, but ultimately that's got the nirvana, as it were.
That's the nirvana. Got it. Okay, great. Now...
Just on that level, so what Mark said was right. We're looking at things like the Bank of England contingent repo facility. The fact that these are contingent facilities that will happen very sporadically, firms need to make sure that they understand how they'll behave in these types of scenarios, how they've got the right people, the systems, do they know what their playbook should be, their escalation, and ultimately their governance. Because these things will happen very, very rarely. So they need to have regular tests, fire drills, etc., to make sure that the theoretical approach that they expect to happen in the event of a crisis can actually operationally happen. You know, people leave the organizations, skill sets evolve and change. And therefore, that's one thing that firms should, you know, really look at in terms of key personnel risk and how they'll manage the operation to access these facilities.
Got it. Perfect. Thanks for that, Philip. So look, turning our attention to technology, what is needed here? You know, is there a silver bullet? Perhaps not. Is it more integration, collaboration? Is it trying to turn batch to real time? What's a technology play and view on this? Mark, do you want to go first?
I mean, to me, it's again back to that kind of how do you provide a true view of liquidity so that you can understand, you know, what's happening now and also start to model it and think about, you know, what it might look like in terms of forecasts and how it might act under stress. You know, to your point, there is nothing around a silver bullet at the moment. So really what you're looking at are how you integrate those technologies, you know, be it, you know, your ALM tools, your modeling tools, your treasury tools, with your collateral tools, and your trading tools. How do you kind of pull all those aspects together? You know, and I think that is the key, you know, and that's not just about I need to do it because the regulator asks me for trading book wind down or recovery or resolution assessment frameworks. I need to do it to allow me to optimize that business and understand how I can better support that business. So to me, it's about thinking through, you know, that integration, you know, at a kind of trade and transactional level, you know, thinking about real-time capabilities, or at least near-time real-time capabilities, thinking through straight-through processing, how does that operate, you know, what, you know, minimize those manual workarounds, you know, being really consistent around how you're mapping data and defining that data between systems. You know, obviously thinking about the legal agreements and how they also map across and being able to readily access those. And of course, that will start to improve the data you've got. You can therefore model that data, but obviously you need better modeling capabilities. And to Phil's point, it's not just about technology, it's about the governance, the process, the control, as well as the people and capabilities of those people to allow you to kind of utilize that technology, to allow you therefore to come up with better information to make more dynamic decisions, both in BAU as well as stress. So that's kind of how I see technology. There's nothing out there. So it's really about how you bring the different technologies together.
Got it. And Phil, your take on technology?
Absolutely. No silver bullet. You're going to need a portfolio of capabilities to manage your liquidity effectively and build out resilience. So there's a number of things that organizations should be looking to do. From a collateral perspective, the first thing is what drives a liquidity obligation? It's your exposure, be it derivative, be it cleared, be it repo. So what tools can you use to try and reduce the exposure, first of all, netting and compression tools? Also, what sort of pre-trade analytics can you use to reduce any initial margin requirements? What sort of cross-product collateralization can you employ? This all reduces your overall exposure and therefore your liquidity. Also looking at forecasting exposures, making sure that anticipated demands can be met. So that's another sort of separate sort of stack that will be required. And once you know then that you've reduced your liquidity requirement to its optimal amount, then how do you optimize that, you know, within your counterparties, within your firm? So many collateral applications have the optimization capability to, you know, keep whatever is important for the firm or what's more valuable, be it different types of credit ratings or different types of liquidity parameters. So there'll be a portfolio of tools that you need ultimately to manage what that liquidity will be.
Got it. Understand right. Another question from Dan here. From regulated liability networks to tokenization, why do regulators steer clear of stable coins as a bridge from cash to crypto blockchain? Philip or Mark, do you want to have a go at that? Are either of you? Do you agree? Or, I mean, Mark, do you agree that's true?
I think it's interesting because I think at the moment there was a paper put out in March by the Bank of England on crypto, and it does talk about crypto collateral. I think it's interesting when we're also looking at things like, you know, central bank digital currencies, how that might change regulation, you know, and the fact, I think, to the point around stable coins, you know, there is a difference between fiat-backed coins like Tether and, you know, and other non-fiat coins like, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum and others. So the fact that they're all treated in the same way is slightly strange when they don't necessarily carry the same kind of risks, if I can use that phrase in reference to it. So I think, to me, I don't really understand what they say clear of it, because ultimately central banks are developing their own digital currencies.
Yeah,
exactly. And as I say, the paper released in March this year also mentioned them as collateral. So I think there will be a change as regulators become more familiar with you know, tokenization or token coins, as it were.
Got it.
That's my perspective.
No, sure. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, so I see more happening in the tokenization of traditional assets, with a lot of focus on money market funds at the moment. So the regulators are creating a sort of environment where this type of tokenization can be supported. And there's a number of organizations out there currently moving money market funds, maybe not in size and volume, but they've definitely got the facility to do that. So, you know, again, that was from issues that organizations faced in the LGI crisis and other crises in terms of impacts to the money market fund liquidity. How can we tokenize that rather than having the issue of redeeming cash out of that money market fund and posting that as collateral? Very much prefer to use that money market fund as collateral instead.
No, sure. And look, related to the tech piece, and it was a very hot topic on the last podcast, but if you broaden it out, what role do you see DLT, blockchain, digital assets are playing in this space? Phil, your view on that?
Yeah, I think that the sort of traditional assets, once they get tokenized, will be used by most organizations. I think that the work we've seen regarding money market funds, that's really happening. It's really important. It's got the Bank of England backing and other sort of, you know, key industry associations. So, you know, that will address key inefficiencies in moving collateral. You know, it'll stop any downward pressure on the money market funds if there's a crisis. People aren't trying to redeem everything instantaneously. They want to move that money market fund instead. So, you know, having these private blockchains that provide that seamless settlement, provide that 100% transparency in real time, I think is only beneficial for the industry.
Got it. And Mark?
Just to hang off to what Phil said, I think the other thing as well is, you know, at the moment, obviously, the world in which we live, you can't actually use crypto to post as collateral. It's just a non-starter where NWAs, or sorry, RWAs are concerned. Obviously, it's over 1,000%. And I think to the points you made earlier, it's really about tokenization of the assets rather than actually using cryptos as collateral in of itself. I think one thing we do know is that, you know, given this tokenization around payment settlements, you know, and the underlying assets, it means that obviously at the world in which we operate and the way in which transactions are going to move will be a lot faster. And again, yeah, without wishing to bang on about it, it's really about, you know, how you get the right capability in place to support that from a management, collateral, obviously liquidity perspective.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, Mark. Look, we are running out of time, but my favorite question last, but what would be your, you know, your key takeaways to the viewers and the audience today? Maybe start with you, Mark.
Sure. To me, it's about how an organization understands its true liquidity position. You know,
yeah,
does that position reflect the collateral and the cash? And by collateral, you know, it's all types of collateral. Organizations might often define collateral as kind of securities, but actually all types of collateral. Do you understand that true liquidity position? You know, and if you don't understand it, you know, how would you actually optimize liquidity? Because you're not really optimizing if you don't understand, you know, all elements of it. So how do you then start to build some kind of reliable integrated view, which means you then start to look at, you know, your monolithic kind of architecture, your batch post processes. What can you do to kind of enhance that or mitigate for those activities? What can you do around it? You know, how do you get the right capability in place? And then how do you start to think through, I mean, you know, to one of the points that Phil made earlier on, how do you actually then start to think through testing your playbooks so that, you know, they work in the worst possible situation, but also therefore provide you with the best position to minimize any stresses, as well as allowing you to think through how you might optimize in the current, hopefully BAU situation. So it's really about, you know, key takeaways are look at your capabilities. Do you truly understand your true liquidity position? If you don't, how can you look at your existing architecture to mitigate its constraints and start to give you a better picture? And how can you build towards that and build the business case for that?
Yeah, get it. And Phil, your key takeaways for the audience?
It's bringing all of this together. We've touched upon many points in the last 25 minutes. You need to have that key governance oversight. You need to ensure that you've got the technology. You need to ensure that you've got the right capabilities within your organization. But you also need to make sure that whilst there's no crisis at the moment, you build now. You don't wait for the next crisis. So make sure that you have these platforms in place that enhance your capabilities to understand what your liquidity requirements should be, your forecasting, your analytics, making sure that your people in your team are skilled up as it becomes more complex. And basically do the building now whilst things aren't in a stress situation.
Got it. Perfect. Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we have run out of time today, but thank you very much, Philip and Mark, for joining us today and sharing your views. It's been very helpful. I feel like we could have talked this for at least another half an hour. If anyone asks any questions after the event, that's not a problem. We will ask our panel to answer them later and send them out. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast today. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining. Look out for our next podcast coming next month. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in today, and goodbye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.